Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Hello and welcome back. We are so glad you're joining us and listening once again via Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcast, KMUN Podcast, or live on the radio.
Live on the radio.
Yes.
And apparently we've gotten lots of complaints. The last 2 weeks it was just you and me.
Oh.
So we brought a guest in.
Yes. And we booked we rebooked him. So
we didn't get any complaints.
We have Jason Plamondon here. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Jason's the chief nursing officer at Providence Seaside Hospital.
Nice.
So we'll talk about that. But we're going to talk.
But say the name again.
Jason Plamondon.
Okay. Because you said it so fast, it sounded like it was Jason from London.
Oh.
So I wanted to make sure nobody gets confused.
So that is hilarious. Quick story. I had a girlfriend in high school. I called and her sister answered. And I said, just let her know that Jason Plamondon called. And then my girlfriend called me later in hysterics saying, my sister just said that Jason from London called. So, yeah.
You're not the only one.
No.
Okay. So. Well, and you are not from London. Where are you from?
Portland.
Okay, Portland. Oh, yeah. We love
this. You should have started a Cockney accent just for laughs.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I am. So, all right.
And the sister, meanwhile, is like, man, he's just normal. Which one? That's true, right? Yeah. Okay.
All right.
You want my word?
Actually, we got things to plug first. Plug. So this Saturday, Mother's Day Tea and Scones in the Flavelle House. Always wonderful. You should get a reservation, so you should call or email us. And then our Thursday night talk, the last one of the season, May 15th at Fort George Brewery, the Level Showroom. Zachary Stocks.
One of our favorites.
Going to be talking a little railroad, a little columns, original dedication, lots of good stuff. And that's going to be a fun talk.
And that's going to be a popular one too, right? I mean, I imagine. So get there early, get your beer.
Yeah, I would definitely
snacks.
Get there early.
Good seat. Okay.
If you want a seat. And then June 7th, of course, the Goonies Day celebratory anniversary, 40th anniversary, all kinds of good stuff that we'll be talking about in the next few weeks.
Okay. I love it.
So what's your slang?
I have vintage slang. So I'm holding up my flashcard and they can both see the word. And I picked this one because we have somebody from healthcare. And the word is slang, though, Jason. But the word's fracture.
Yeah. I was looking.
And it's from 1946.
I was reading fracture. That, wondering if I was misreading it somehow when you were holding it up. So fracture.
So how's this here? What does
it
mean?
Not used in the medical sense. I guess first, you can appear far smarter than I do when I guess something really stupid. So it's 1947, you said?
46.
46. So post-World War II, the growth of commercialism in America, the United States. So fracture. I am going to guess that. And you didn't say if it was a verb or noun or what, did you?
Oh, I didn't. I don't know what it is. It looks like an adjective.
An adjective. So I think a fracture, something is fractured. I've got to go with the medical. It's going to be something that is broken apart.
No. Anything?
No. Yeah, I would think in the same thing, like a split or not connected. Yeah,
It's to make someone laugh heartily. Fracture.
Yeah, that's not coming back.
I was never going to.
He fractures me with that story.
No.
Okay.
No.
That's why it's
not happening.
Vintage.
That's why it stopped. That's why it stopped being used.
Mac's not a fan of my vintage slang, but you know, some of those. I mean, we could bring that back at work.
Yeah.
And no, really, we could have.
Oh, just think about the problems with.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not a fracture. It's a fracture. I mean, no. Not coming back.
Okay.
All right. But things that happen tomorrow, history highlights, as always, icebreakers or things to talk about over dinner or whatever you want to do. So these are things that happen on May 5th, 1809. Mary Keyes becomes the first American woman to receive a U.S. patent.
Oh.
For her straw and silk weaving technique to create hats.
Oh.
And I like this. President James Madison himself signed the patent.
Oh, well,
so
cool.
He recognized that it was something cool here.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's a fan of hats. I don't know. I don't usually do birthdays, but 1818, Karl Marx is born.
Okay.
Oh, you know, the Communist Manifesto guy. 1821, Napoleon dies in exile. I still have not finished watching that Napoleon's miniseries.
Oh.
So I started it. All right. 1862, outnumbered Mexican army defeats the French at the Battle of Puebla.
I don't have anything for you.
May 5th.
Oh, got
Mayo de Cinco. That's where it comes from.
Huh. Oh, okay.
I was tempted to make that the history highlight of the day, but I kept moving on. 1868, Martha Jones becomes the first black woman to receive a U.S. patent.
Oh, same day. Interesting.
Isn't that weird? I wonder if they did it on the purpose for inventing a machine that husks and shells corn.
Oh, interesting. Wow. I feel like we've talked about her now. She rings the bell.
Maybe in just like a list of inventors or something.
Yeah. But oh, interesting.
I like corn.
Yeah, sure.
I like the Brown's Meat corn feed.
Right. Okay. Well, and if you want it in a can, somebody's got to husk it.
That's right. 1891, Music Hall opens in New York City.
Oh, okay.
It later becomes called the Carnegie Hall.
Nice. Hmm.
And have we ever seen anything at Carnegie Hall?
I have not.
No. I'd love
to. Sad.
I did, but I can't remember what it was. I must have been very, very young.
Okay.
All right. 1921, Chanel No. 5 perfume launches.
Oh, wow.
Love it.
And
it's vintage.
Do you use Chanel No. 5?
No, not at all.
I think that's everybody my age gave to their moms
for
Mother's Day or something. 1945, and we have talked about this one on the show. Six people are killed in Oregon by Japanese bomb. 1945 in Gerhardt Mountain, Mrs. Elsie Mitchell and five children are killed while attempting to drag a Japanese balloon out of the woods. It was a preacher, and they were going on a picnic, and he was like getting the picnic ready or parking the car, and his wife and the children went into the woods and saw something colorful, and then it exploded.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
We have a podcast on it. It is very sad because they were on a vacation and it was a beautiful day and just very tragic.
And something they didn't colorful.
Know what it was. But
was it like a surveillance balloon or a weather balloon or something?
They were like weather balloons, but they attached bombs. And the idea behind it, they knew about the jet stream and they thought if they could make a whole bunch of forest fires all over the West Coast, that we'd pull our troops back and it would cause a panic. And this is the only one that actually ever did anything because we live in a rainforest.
Right. So it didn't work.
It was never dry enough for any of these things to work.
Right.
All right. But that one did, and tragic. Yeah. 1961, Alan Shepard becomes the first American in space.
Oh, cool. And
now I love the space stuff.
Yeah.
1978, Ben and Jerry's opens its first ice cream shop.
Nice.
Still a fan.
Are we fans? What's our flavor?
Oh, I don't know. Now I can't think of
putting you on the spot.
Cookie dough. There's better names for it than that.
I like the American Dream Cone.
Yes. Stephen Colbert.
Yeah. Yes. It is so good.
It is. So I lived next door when I was in Vermont. I lived next door to a guy that worked there. He's one of the, not the tasting guys, but making sure it was all
quality mix.
Yeah. Quality control, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they would chop them in half and kind of look to make sure all the things were dispersed correctly.
Oh,
but he could come home every day with 4 pints. So he was just like giving them out to the neighborhood.
Well, yeah. What can you do with
And my
pints?
Daughter, who was like 6 and 7 at the time, would wait outside hoping that she'd like puppy dog eyes when he got home. Like, do you have any ice cream? She'd come home with like 2 pints.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah. It was a nice company. But my history highlight today, thing I think had the most impact on history. And as always, I will be open to debate if either of you disagree with me. But 1936, Edward Ravenscroft, I love the name, patents the screw-on bottle cap with a pour lid.
The screw-on bottle cap. Yes. Like Tide. Is that what you're thinking?
Think of everything with the screw tops. Before that, it's, you know, you have to get the bottle opener.
Right.
Or
cans. And now you've got this thing you can put the lid back on.
Right.
And it's still secure. And then even better with the pour, you can pour it.
Okay. Right.
So I kind of felt like that had a lot of impact.
It did. Yeah. A day of patents too.
I know. Sorry, Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah. Nope. That was a good one. I think you got that one right.
So what I miss?
You didn't.
Wow. All right.
But I was excited because I knew that Jason was coming today again. Jason Plamundon from Providence Eastside Hospital. He is the chief nursing officer. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Glad we tucked into joining us. And we just wanted to learn a little bit more about you.
Okay.
And what brought you here. So we'll start with, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Portland. Spent my whole life there. In fact, one of my favorite stories is some years ago, probably 10 years ago, I was talking to my brother, and he was asking me for my address. He now lives in Atlanta with his wife. And so I'm giving him the address, and I give him the zip code, and he starts cracking up. Like, he's laughing so hard, he's almost crying. And I'm like, what are you laughing about? And he said, you live in the same zip code that we've lived in. You lived in our entire life. So when he moved, so like, I only moved like a very small little circle in in Oregon, so in Portland. So yeah, so just born and raised and lived my whole life in Portland, yeah.
And what part of Portland?
Do you know the Laurelhurst neighborhood? So yeah, I went to grade school at Laurelhurst, and then over to All Saints Middle School, and then Central Catholic for a little bit, and ended up graduating at Franklin High School.
Okay. Central Catholic was a nemesis of Reynolds High School.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So I got to jump in. How many zip codes are there in Portland?
I'm not sure how many there are.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. There's a lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
But he's meaning like Oregon, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Because I was going to be very amused.
Wow.
I mean, it's already funny that he's laughing and he finds that very funny. Right. But I was also amused that, okay, if there's only like two for Portland, that's even funnier. But if there's like 12, okay, that's not quite as funny.
Right.
It makes me laugh that he was laughing.
Yeah.
Sorry. Had to ask.
Yeah.
I don't know how many there are. So.
Yeah. Okay. So Laurelhurst neighborhood. So back in the day. So then what made you switch from Central Catholic to, did you say Lincoln?
Went to Franklin.
Franklin.
What ended up happening, so my grandfather was the one that was helping us pay, my parents pay for me to go to Central Catholic because it was so expensive. And he passed away halfway through my freshman year. And so my parents pulled me aside and they said, look, you know, we'll figure this out if this is where you want to stay. But by then, most of my friends had left Central Catholic for one reason or another. Either they just were tired of it or they were asked to leave. And so I told them I'd rather go someplace else. Yeah. So I actually ended up going to Benson High School for a little bit, but there you have to, that was back when it was a polytechnical school.
Yep,
so you
magnet
had
programs.
Yeah. So you had to pick like a
pathway. Or
yeah.
Something
pathway. Nice. Yeah. You had to pick something. And I got placed in something cause I kind of came late. And I didn't, it was fluid power and I had just no interest in it. And so a couple of my friends were going to Franklin High School. And so I started going there. And that's the good news. So this is my favorite part of the story is I always tell this is that's where I met my wife. So it was meant to be, right? Like three high schools and then I met my wife. Yeah. So.
And Dion, we adore her too.
Yeah.
We should have her out too.
And were you a couple then or did it only happen later?
It was later. So we became friends in high school. We had the same circle of friends. And then shortly after graduating from high school, we started dating. So, yeah.
I love that. That is a good story.
Yeah.
Three high schools.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So do you remember at Benson, just down the street, was that Franz?
Oh, yeah.
Or it was like a factory, right? So they have a huge bread making factory. I just remember every time I went to Benson, everywhere you walked in the building, it smelled
fresh
bread.
Yep. Yeah.
All day long. Yeah.
Sometimes it was awesome, but other times, like if you were really hungry and lunch was a ways off, it was terrible to sit in class trying to concentrate as you're
all the
smelling.
Windows are open because there's no air conditioning, right?
Yeah.
Like so growing up in Portland, what did you like about that at the time?
I just liked how kind of close knit it felt. You know, there were kind of all sorts of different people, you know, like, I liked the vibe, I guess, of Portland.
And what were you involved in? Did you do sports, after school activities? What kept you busy?
I played soccer for a little while up through high school. Yeah, I played baseball in grade school. Yeah. And I was learning piano when I was a kid. So I would do piano lessons and
all the things.
Yeah, just pretty much. Yeah, we were a very active family. And my parents were avid joggers because that was kind of the thing coming up in the 70s, you know, was jogging. And so we would do those activities as a family. So we would sometimes we would volunteer for the runs. Sometimes we would participate in setting them up, handing out the Gatorade, doing that type of thing, or we were actually doing the run together as a family. So, yeah. That was pretty cool.
That is awesome.
So something when we interview people that grew up in Astoria or Warrenton, they talk about being from another time period and the free range kids that they could walk around downtown. How was that for you in Portland? Were you getting on a bus and going all over town?
Yeah. So like, just as an example, if you know the area, so I grew up in Laurelhurst, right by Laurelhurst Grade School, but my baseball practice was at Grant High School.
Oh my gosh.
So I would ride my bike for baseball practice on my own. And then my piano teacher was up the street from that. So we went everywhere. Yeah, my parents had no hesitation in that, you know. Yeah, it's a very different time period, right? Yeah.
Beautiful neighborhoods, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Still are. At what point did you start thinking about going into the healthcare field?
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting. So this is technically my third career.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah, so what happened was I was in high tech, and I was working for a company called Vocker Siltronic, and they make silicon wafers that get sold to places like Intel, Motorola, IBM. It's the substrate to make a computer chip.
Okay.
And so high tech, I worked in a clean room, and then I got a job in facilities operations. So I worked in where we make ultra pure water and where we treated the wastewater from the plant. And I liked the job, but what ended up happening was there was a big downturn in economics, and Vocker had made it clear that their next plant, they weren't going to build in Portland like they had told us they were going to. They had decided to build in, I think, Korea at the time.
Wow.
And a lot of people just started leaving, and there was this huge downturn in the economy, and they were going to start laying people off. And so I got online and started researching what other careers could I do. And I found this really cool government website that what it would do is it would show you, you could type in any career you wanted, and it would show you the viability of that career, kind of the median pay, and then how much schooling you would need to get into that career. And when I came across nursing, for the viability of the career, it said no unforeseen end to possibilities, basically saying, like, because some of them said, you know, it, you know, they could see like in 5 to 10 years, maybe that wouldn't be a viable career. And it was only 2-year degree. So I'm like, at the time. And so I went to my local community college, PCC, because I'd done some credits before, and just talked to them about what I wanted to do. And they laid out the pathway, and I left Vocker and went to school.
Oh my goodness.
A nurse. Yeah.
At what age was this?
I was, I must have been about 36 because it took 3 years. So I graduated when I was 39.
And what was the reaction of your family and friends that you got this in theory, great job that, maybe you get laid off. Maybe you're not going to get laid off. Maybe you have to move to Korea. Maybe you don't.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm leaving that. I'm going to be going to
They were school. Very supportive. And so what I did was, as I was kind of researching and talking to the school, then I went and had lunch with two friends separately. Both of them worked at Randall's Children's Hospital. They were nurses or male friends of mine. And both of them, before I could finish, were like, oh my gosh, you'd make a great nurse. You have to do this. And the kind of the final decider for me was I was looking through the Oregonian, through the WANADs, like for the current role that I had. And there was one little section, and it was like there were two jobs. So you have to imagine there was, you know, hundreds of us going to be competing for that job. And then this is a true story. I kept looking in this 2 or 3 page insert fell into my lap, and I grabbed that, and that was a combined advertising between Kaiser, OHSU, Providence, and Legacy, because they were so desperate for nurses, and it was pages and pages and pages of jobs. And I'm like, okay, yeah, we're doing this. So,
and you could pick your specialty.
You could go anywhere.
Your routes.
Yeah.
I think people always think too that nurses are bedside serving patients that are in a hospital. Mm-hmm. And that's not, I mean, that is true.
Right.
But there are so many different avenues that you can take.
Yeah. And one of my favorite nursing instructors said, you know, your best course is to go into the field with an open mind and let it guide you. if you make a decision about, well, this is the only thing I'm going to do and this is all I'll ever do, you're going to limit yourself to all these other opportunities. Because I didn't go into nursing and think, oh, you know, I'm going to become a chief nursing officer at
right.
Seaside Hospital. Mm-hmm. I mean, that wasn't even on my radar, you know. So, yeah, you just kind of have to, I mean, and what a great career to be able to just be open and where is the interest and where could you go, you know?
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the education and what kinds of classes are there that it's a 2 or 3 year program that you were in. You just talk about, is it 90 hours a week? Is it 5 classes a week? What are we talking about?
I think the prerequisites are, you know, all your basic, you know, like A&P, anatomy and physiology, math, English, you know, writing. You kind of have to get those basics in. And then the nursing program itself, they really suggested, and I took it to heart, working is going to be difficult while you do this because you have clinicals along with the coursework. And so we were in a fortunate position where, you know, we were able to borrow some money and I was able to not work while I was in school. But to me, it was daunting. And what my wife and I had decided is we wanted to set it up in a way that my job was going to school. So we were fortunate, but I really think the best way to get the best experience out of it is to kind of treat it that way. But yeah, it's pretty involved. And I think especially your senior year, because then you have to get a really big chunk of clinical hours. I think it's like 140 or something. It's a lot. So in addition to going to school full time, then you're expected to go and work at the hospital, essentially. Right. Right.
So yeah, at the same time.
And in that experience for me in history, it's an internship. And,
right.
And I went to a museum and they rotated me through the different departments. So I got a sense of this is what a curator does. This mm-hmm. is what an archivist does. What is that like for you in your education? Are you assigned to one thing or do you get exposure to a lot of different things?
No, you get exposure. I think they start you out. Normally, the nursing schools like to start you out in a long-term care facility because it's a little more low-key. You can do assessments. It's not that fast-paced like the hospital. And then once you're done with that, then you go into the hospital, and they like to move you through. They like to, let's look at surgery. Let's look at a surgical unit. Let's look at cardiac unit. Let's look at intensive care, ED. They kind of give you a little taste of everything. And then as you get closer to your final term, then they say, all right, now it's time to narrow it down. Where do you want to spend that last term working? And really, what do you want to see? Yeah.
So I want to give Jason a lot of credit because he's really influenced the partnership between Providence and Clatsop Community College.
Yeah.
And hearing your story now, did that have a lot to do with you wanting to build that same sort of positive experience in growing these new nurses right here at home?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, I had a great experience. I ended up going to Mount Hood Community College and they were just amazing. And when I came here, what we were realizing was we had these open positions and we were trying to draw people from Portland down here. Well, it didn't make any sense to me. We have a community college right here in Astoria, and we have local people going to that school. Why not grow people who are already here and want to be here? So the part of the problem is we'd get people from Portland, they'd work for a couple months, and then they'd want to go back to Portland.
Right.
So we wanted to grow our community. So I think that's why that relationship was so important to me with Clatsop Community College.
Yeah. And how easy is it now? I mean, I feel like even just starting in nursing, because you can come be a medical assistant very easily.
Right.
And then the process to become a nurse at any level, I just feel like it's very easy now.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot easier, I think, than like when I went through, it was pretty competitive, but I think there are more schools now and they have more opportunities. Yeah. So, yeah.
So big plug, but basically you can get your education paid for is what
that's what I was going to ask.
By Providence or other healthcare industries as well.
Right.
By giving you a job, but also actually helping you continue those learning credits and advancing your career. We have RNs. I mean, people that have their full degrees and are nurses that are continuing their career and having it paid for.
Yeah.
And I would assume that it's a continuing to grow career.
Right.
That people living longer, there's just going to be more and more need.
Yeah, there's all sorts of opportunity, definitely. Yeah.
So what brought you from Portland out of that zip code to here?
Yeah,
what was that transition like?
Yeah, so my chief nursing officer at Portland Providence Medical Center contacted me in 2021, January, and said, hey, we've got this CNO position in Seaside, and we think you'd be a great candidate. Would you be interested? And at the time, my wife was working remotely because of COVID. And I said, well, let's go through the process. Let's see, you know. And I came out to Seaside, toured the hospital, and my wife just knew when I got done with the tour. She's like, you're gonna want to do this. So, and I did for a short time work at Milwaukee Hospital, which is a community based hospital as well. And you know, no offense to Prov Portland, but I love being a part of the community, and it's harder in those bigger hospitals in the bigger cities. You just don't get that same community feel. So, yeah.
Right. We talk about that often. I'm going to go back to your running, because you said you used to do that as a family, and I know that you continue to do that.
Yeah.
So this is a passion that takes you all over. When was your last race? What's your next one? What are your goals in running competitively?
So the last big one was the Portland Marathon.
Marathon.
Yep. So I did the Portland Marathon in October. And then I did our Columbia Crossing.
Of course. Yes.
After that. So this year I'm going to do the Portland Marathon again. And I'm also thinking about doing, there's a marathon in Honolulu. So, I mean, a great excuse, right, to go to Honolulu, right? Just, you know.
And Dion, your wife's like, oh, yes, you should go and go run. And
yeah,
I'll be at the pool.
Yep, she's really pushing that one. She's like, I'll be getting a massage. You have fun.
To do those things. Yeah. What are some of the things that you like about here? Obviously, you like being outside because you run often. But what else keeps you here?
I think what keeps me here is that the community, right? Like, when I was working in Portland and where I lived in Portland. I lived there in the same house for 20 years, just up the street from Prov Portland Hospital. And I could go to a restaurant or the store and not run into any coworkers. And here, there's no way I can get out of Costco without talking to at least 3 or 4 people. And I like that. I like that community feel. You know, I'm part of a community health collaboration with CMH and with Clatsop County and with a lot of other community members, and just to be a part of that and be looking for ways to improve our community, that just feels good. Yeah, that's what I like about being here.
But how often has anybody in Costco said, could you take a look at this for me?
Luckily, they know that I'm on the administrative side, so they know.
Oh, but you're still a nurse.
Yeah, I am still a nurse. Yes.
It does happen, like in the hallways, you're you know, is this infected?
Oh, yeah.
Should
about
I go
this?
To the ER? So as you continue to stay here, what about Providence is unique? Oh, and I also want to say, too, we are celebrating National Healthcare Week.
Yes.
So thank a doctor, thank a nurse, thank anyone that works in healthcare. We at Providence are celebrating all week starting today. Through the rest of the week, and it's all of our clinics, all the people that work in all of them. So thank you. Yeah, and thank you for being in healthcare.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Go make some history, and if you get hurt, go to Providence. No, go to any local hospital. We like them all. Go make some history. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.